So the governor put forward a package in about the first or second week in June. And I immediately had discussions with the governor's office, spent about 3 hours on the phone with the governor and a couple of his staff members over a period of about 2 months working on bringing these bills forward and bringing the governor up to speed where we're at with these bills. Some of the bills that the governor brought forward weren't going anywhere the way in the form that they were. So as a result of that, we worked on starting with many of those bills were already in the process of being brought forward for legislation and circulation. And so we worked on those bills, cleaned those bills up, changed a little bit of the direction on a couple of those bills. And so it wasn't like all of a sudden out of the clear blue sky, we're coming up with a package of bills. The 8 bills that came out in the PACT legislation that I released a couple of weeks ago have been circulated. Those bills have been, in some cases, some of them have been worked on for several years, actually, in getting them through the fruition process. One of those being the bill for dealing with the use of force by law enforcement if there is a death or serious injury involved, where there's a law enforcement officer involved and a citizen for loss of life on either side. And that accountability board is based on the National Transportation Safety Model and has been a work in progress since about 2015, 2016. You're probably familiar with the name Michael Bell. Michael brought that forward, that idea, and has worked really hard to keep the personality part of it out of it to help us create a model that potentially, if it's approved here in Wisconsin, could be used nationally to help get to the root cause of issues that cause problems with law enforcement and the community and how they work together, how they come together. So this board would go in if there was an incident where there was a loss of life by either a citizen or an officer. They would come in and do their own separate investigation that would be just for the purpose of determining root causes and identifying any areas that can be improved. And that could be a change in training. It could be mental health issues, how we address issues after incidents, could be post-traumatic stress injuries that our first responders have to deal with the violence and things that they see day in and day out. That becomes cumulative and causes issues. And then you have, you know, drug issues involved with people they're dealing with and having to deal with those things and be able to de-escalate those situations. And so this board would go in and look at the evidence from that specific incident after the scene has basically been inspected for the criminal aspect and potential violations of policy, et cetera. This board would then be able to go through the scene, process the scene, collect information. They'd have everything would be open to them, and then they would use that to determine what issues came out of that could be reformed, resolved, eliminated, changed, that would make it a lesser potential that incident would happen again. And this is the same thing that they do with common carrier crashes with buses or planes or anything that's a common carrier. The NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, comes in. They do a totally separate investigation, and that's to determine if there's issues potentially with the training, with whatever it might be. And this will instill confidence that we have a third-party group doing this that is looking just solely for the cause. They're not looking at being a finger pointer. Now, with that being said, you have to remember that Wisconsin was the first state to pass legislation that anytime there's an officer-involved shooting, where we have an officer discharge their firearm, somebody is killed or injured, automatically it has to be a third-party department doing the investigation. In the state of Wisconsin, we use the Department of Justice criminal investigation, and they come in and they do an investigation to determine what the facts are of that case. So right now that's what's happening with the incident that occurred here in Kenosha. And they are going through that information. They have about a 30-day window that AG Cowell is working with. I had discussions with him about, you know, what's going on. Matter of fact, with the legislation that we've been working, he's also been involved in the process. So at this point in time, we're looking at the ability to be able to have the information come in, have it be totally analyzed. I know with the issue that happened here in Kenosha with the initial incident, I know there's at least 26 videos and about 80 people that are being interviewed. So that takes time to do it correctly. And once that's completed, then that will be passed on to your district attorney here in Kenosha County for them to make their assessment. So there is a process, and there is a clear process. And this is what's really important, is that the process is allowed to be worked through, because it creates an environment of, I think, the ability that you have confidence that what they're doing is truthfully correct. And if you're working within that process, if you skip a step, it's pretty obvious, because everybody knows what that process is going to be. So I'm confident that we'll continue to be able to, I think, provide good information once it becomes available, and that we won't have any additional violence occurring as a result of that. Okay, so that's our NTSB part of one of the bills we're bringing forward. Medical marijuana. Somebody brought up medical marijuana. Actually, I haven't seen any truly legitimate proposals yet for anything that would come out. And I think the problem is that everything that's been coming out is just geared towards full legalization. And I can tell you that's not going to happen, at least I don't think in my lifetime, given all the difficulties and challenges that there have been in other states with full legalization. So something that I think as having been a law enforcement officer, I would not support. Potentially maybe something with medical issues, potentially, yes, but it's got to have a legitimate identified purpose, I think. So that's pretty much that with medical marijuana. And the fact that, you know, there are things that are discussed in some of these states that there's going to be this huge windfall in taxes that they're going to get off of it, but then they're not considering all of the negative effects that occur as a result of that legalization. And if you look at Colorado as an example, they've had all kinds of problems. So that becomes one of the difficulties with that for us as state legislators. State funding for body cams was another question we had. I think this will probably be proposed when our session starts in January. I know that there was some legislation that was being created to address that. Honestly, I really don't know where that's going to go for a funding source at this point, because we're probably talking a lot of money. And honestly, there's a lot of departments that have already bit the bullet and bought them. So I don't know if it'll just be where they'll just give money to a community to go buy it, or it'll be potentially, it could be a zero interest loan or something like that would be made available to the community to be able to source those, or a percentage. That's all up in the air yet. And we also have the potential that there could be federal funding available for at least a portion of that nationally, because that's what they've been talking about, for potential to fund that as a resource. So I do support body cams. I think it really gives a perspective of what that call for service is. And the new technology is absolutely awesome. So if one officer pulls his firearm and you've got five officers that are standing there within a relatively short distance, not too short, but within a distance, the Bluetooth turns all their cameras on immediately also. And so you're getting different perspectives for where those officers are at too. So there's a lot of really good technology that they have out there and available, and looking forward to make that happen. We did have legislation that I think took a little bit of the fear out of having body cams and wearing them that passed last session. And I think it was pretty much, I think it was unanimous in both houses, signed by the governor. And I think that that will take a lot of the mystery out of, you know, how do we record it? How do we keep it? Privacy issues, those types of things were addressed by that legislation. And I can talk about that if somebody has specific questions. I can find that out for you with what those things are. Let's see. The impact of a county resolution on racism, as a public health crisis on the state or other counties. I'm not sure how you legislate common sense, because we have not been able to do that at the state level ever. And when I served on the Racine County Board, obviously there were things that you just can't legislate common sense. You have to have individuals making good choices. The fact that we have prejudices that have followed us throughout our entire time that we've been a nation, I think is something that we need to look back. We need to remember history. We don't need to get rid of history. We need to remember history so it's not repeated. And we need to be able to have conversations like we're going to have here tonight, and have the ability to be able to talk about things. And I think taking hate out of the picture eliminates about 99% of that. And I think it's about creating good opportunities for everybody, and a process that everybody can understand, so that everybody has an equal chance to be there without giving one group or one person, or elevating somebody that is in a specific position that they should get something that other people don't have the opportunity to have. So my thought is that whenever we get resolutions from county boards, and we get those, I get those from you guys occasionally, where you send something up to the state. I know Sam does too. That's a guide for us. It tells us where there's an area of interest, that it gives us a little better perspective, I think. So I don't think it's a bad thing to do those. But I also think that, you know, I think it's really important, especially on this level of government where we are at, and I've served in this level, so I can say this. I think when you're at this level of government, being a county representative, you are so close to the people that you represent, because they truly are your neighbor right next door. Townships are even more close, I think. But I think that potential to have a thumb on the pulse of what's going on in your district, it helps us to guide us with the thoughts of people and their emotions and the importance. If we can't sit down and have a discussion about something, and we can't sit down and feel that we're confident we're going to be safe in our environment, and having a 30-year law enforcement career, I'll talk a little bit about that. I think it's important that everybody who lives anywhere in my district can walk out of their house and feel confident that they're not going to get mugged or robbed or raped or shot or whatever. I mean, that's just not, we're in America. That's just absolutely not acceptable. And one of the gentlemen spoke during the public comments, and was concerned about people being fearful. And that is something that has been created by the media. I think there's a lot more fear that's been created that way. Having people be able to speak and be able to speak about what their thoughts are, and being free to do that, that's what America is all about. So as long as you're not being hateful, and you know, you're speaking about an issue, you should be able to do that. So we have to respect both sides of that issue. And that's why I think, and why I generally will make sure that things that I'm doing have a good process, that they're transparent. People can ask me questions. I'll tell you where I'm at and where I'm at in the process. And I'm happy to chat with anybody about any issue. Our office is always open if somebody's got questions. My staff is phenomenal. And I work very closely with Sam Kirkman and with Todd and Bob. Actually, Southeastern Wisconsin, I will tell you this. Southeastern Wisconsin, we're pretty blessed, because while we don't always agree with each other, I mean, even Sam and I don't always agree on every bill, right? Okay, we don't even always agree. And that's a good thing, because we have good conversations, and she sees it from a little bit different perspective. But looking at all that, we're able to sit down and we're able to have a talk about it. Same thing with Todd and Tip. And I mean, we've got a pretty good relationship between all of our representatives here. So we do work together. Peter Barca, everybody's familiar with Pete. I spoke at his confirmation, at his Senate confirmation for his spot serving on the Department of Revenue. And I mean, everybody just went, wow, you bet. Because he's a straight shooter, he's a good friend. We haven't always agreed on everything, but we're able to talk and have those conversations. So I want to thank you for allowing us to come here tonight. And I'll shut up and let Sam fill in whatever I didn't. Take it away, Sam.
Bancher covered a lot, so he went through pretty much every issue. So much, first off, again, thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. I do appreciate it. I appreciate taking the time. I think these conversations are helpful. You know, a resolution is something you can send to us, but actually when you sit down and have a conversation with folks, I think you get more accomplished. And this past year has been one of the most challenging years. I think the senator would agree to that. I was just going out, I had my staff pull some data just on the contacts. From my office, from March to now, I've had over 1,230 contacts just on the COVID situation. I personally called back over 435 of those calls. That's the ones where I actually got back to the staff and wasn't somebody just seeing me in the grocery store, came up with a concern, or, you know, at school with my boys, or, you know, out with my boys. These were those contacts where actually got logged into the office. So like Van said, I do want to credit my staff. You know, a lot of times, I know you guys have great staff here. We leave those folks out, and they have been working sometimes till 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night these days, especially when COVID first came on, the calls that we were getting. You know, the biggest issue that I faced early on in the COVID, and since Van covered the police bill so eloquently, I'm going to talk about unemployment a little bit here. This has probably been one of the largest issues that my office ever faced. And again, we aren't insurance, or we aren't unemployment specialists, but we got the calls. I got over 200 calls to my office. And I know even, you know, the Democrat, you know, Senator Wirtz's office, Paula, she was taking calls early in the morning. The earliest I had a call this year so far was about 6 o'clock in the morning. Somebody just very upset, had waited several weeks to have their unemployment heard. So we're working through that process. And again, I didn't agree with everything going on with the administration, and reached out to the secretary's office, Secretary Frostman's office, to try to get answers, and actually reached out here to the Job Center, Doug Bartz, and having conversations, because again, and Andy and I chatted yesterday, county government is an arm of state government. And, you know, people who had never had to file unemployment, the dental hygienist, I had two of them call me that first week. They've never been unemployed. How to work this, how to apply. And those were the questions that we were really getting. And it was hard because they couldn't come in for services here at the county level either, because things were closed. So we were trying to do a lot of it over the phone, and then trying to get people online and get those services. So we still have people waiting since June. Now, that's just not acceptable. And that's the hard part for us, is when you have folks that are having a hard time. My staff will send emails over to the department to try to get those claims expedited as quickly as possible. I know that there is housing assistance and those types of programs. There's three main programs that we try to refer people to if they're in fear of being evicted. So again, those were the types of calls that we were getting over the last few months with regards to unemployment. Because of a bill that we passed in April, and I am the co-chair of the audit committee, we also did go in and look to audit them at that time. So the state auditor did come out with a couple recommendations, and we're working through them. They are now back into the unemployment program, looking at the calls. Several weeks, there were close to 1 million calls into the unemployment system, 1 million calls. So there was roughly 500 people to answer those calls. So that was a huge hang up, and it took us a while to get people trained up to actually answer those calls. So we have worked through that. There are significantly fewer, and the unemployment rate has gone down. And so we want to make sure people are able to work and work in a safe environment, so that we can nip this pandemic and get through this. So that's what the unemployment calls and contacts to the office. Also wanted to bring up just a little touch on a couple of things, and add to what Senator Wongard had said about body cams. We did have just a special committee that looked completely at body cams, and it did pass on a unanimous basis. And it was to try to help departments not fear putting and having body cams available. Again, looking at the redaction, safety, and I'll use an example of a police officer gets called because somebody feels that they're being stalked. Police officer comes and takes a report in somebody's apartment. Well, now that body cam is on, is that public data or not public data, and those kinds of things. Simple little examples like that with how to redact, and again, if somebody's calling somebody for help, and then possibly giving a perpetrator the opportunity to see inside somebody's apartment, those kinds of things. Again, how does a local government store that data going forward? How long do you store that data going forward? It was a call for service, but it didn't, there was no criminal side to it, or maybe it was, you know, unfounded. Can you delete that data? So again, those are the kinds of questions I know that over the years, local governments had brought up to us, and that's why the special committee was so important to dive deep. And that's, people talk about special committees or speakers task force. This is really what, how bills are created and crafted. You know, Senator Wongard has a lot of expertise, but I also want to bring up one of my former colleagues, Gary Byes. Representative Byes was the leader of that piece of legislation that came forth, that original Mike Bell piece of legislation that got signed into law. Gary represented the Door County area, but he was had been a sheriff's department deputy for about 25 years plus, and really pushed for that bill and used his knowledge and his experience of why it was a good bill, even though there was people who didn't vote for that bill. So, but now that you actually see that the bill passed, and we were a leader in the country to actually pass that piece of legislation, and now several other states, Gary, I talked to him about 2 weeks ago, he said 6 to 7 other states have passed a similar legislation based on what Wisconsin did. So I'm proud that we actually put that in the books, and now Senator Wongard, along with I think actually Senator Taylor, are working on this additional package of bills to complement what has already passed. And so that will be the legislative aspect, but then there's also going to be the speaker's task force, which I wanted to really dive into issues of why we're here and why we're having these discussions, because there's not one thing that we can do to solve it. So we all have to sit and listen to everybody, and then you learn from everybody, and then you can go forth if there's legislation that can come out of that. Previous speakers task force included, we did ones on adoption, mental health, just a number of different issues, but those are the adoption and the mental health have added to our legislative rapport. Mental health, we now have a standing committee to deal and address that situation, because it's mental health for children, it's mental health in our corrections, it's many different things, and it's just not one thing that we can do. And you know this down here, when you get calls from help from your constituents, or people are coming in here seeking assistance, it might be many different factors to why that person is needing assistance for mental health. Were they just not taking their medication, or did they not be able, you know, getting access to care, health care? What were those factors? And so these are where we're really trying to, you know, with the speaker putting this task force together on race, police standards, I think it's going to have an in-depth, very detailed conversation so that we can bring forth legislation and add to the things that Senator Wongard and Senator Taylor are already working on. And, you know, because again, there might be something in there that I don't agree upon, but on a whole, do I agree upon everything that Van's talked about today? Yes. But there have been bills in the past where Van hit and I haven't agreed. Yeah. but that's okay. Having a discussion, a respectful conversation, I think sometimes has gotten lost in today's world. You know, in preparation for today, I was thinking a lot about some of the people who I replaced, and and van replaced. Again, they used to solve a lot by having those conversations outside and building those relationships and trusting people. And that's where I hope that we can continue to have those dialogues, because, you know, our community is so dependent upon it. I mean, people have been very concerned. The calls that I got in the last 3 weeks has been about public safety, fear. And it is very, it's hard to address those concerns, you know, because people's emotions are running very, very high on both sides. So I try to be a calming person to try to address whatever the concern might be. And again, thanking you for wanting to work together to help rebuild our community here. We need to have those conversations. I need to work with the county exec and the mayor and you as county supervisors, because you all talk to different people than I do. And I think that's important going forward. So on that one, and then on the one final thing you asked about with regards to the medical marijuana, there were several different bills that were brought forth last session. Representative Mary Felskowski, she is now running for the state Senate. I believe she's probably going to bring her medical marijuana bill. That was probably one of the bills that I could support in a form. It's similar to Ohio. I know Melissa Sargent has a bill as well. I thought it went too far. And like what we did with the CBD bills over time, having good public testimony on why it's needed and necessary, and doing it in a way that we can control it to allow the people who really truly need it to have access to it. I know that there are some of my colleagues that are completely opposed to right, you're right. But CBD bill, originally, there were several of our colleagues that fought Van and I on that particular issue over the years, and we finally got it through. Then we had to do a cleanup bill to the first bill, and we got that through and onto the governor's desk for him to sign. So I think with the medical marijuana bill, you know, one of the most, during the CBD discussion, Casey Fitzpatrick, a gold medal Olympic speed skater, he came to testify about his sister who had terminal cancer. And it was bone cancer, which is a very, very painful cancer. And he talked about his family struggle. And it really was one of those testimonies over my time period that I will never forget, his mom and dad, him sharing his mom and dad's story of how they helped his sister drive to another state and get some seeds and bring them back here and make a concoction and give it to his sister so that she could have peace essentially in the last few months of her life, last few weeks of her life. So that was one of the stories over time. And again, he came to testify on the CBD bill, not medical marijuana, but obviously their story was greater than just the CBD bill. So I think those conversations in done in a respectful way and having legislation that's very thoughtful. And I think Mary has put a lot of effort into her bill, and I might not agree with every nuance of Mary's bill, but it's definitely a good start. I know she'll be in the state Senate, so I hope, and she can bring up her bill when she's over there.
Thank you for answering all the questions I brought forward to you. I very much appreciate that. You said that was Representative Felskowski?
Felskowski,
okay.
She's now running for state Senate.
Sure.
So, you know, her state senator is now Congressman Tiffany. So, you know, that's an open seat up in the northern part of the state of Wisconsin.
So is her proposal, is it open to the public at this point or no?
It was Assembly Bill 750. So, and then Melissa Sargent's bill was Assembly Bill 220. So you can look at those bills again. They'll be redrafted, I'm assuming, next legislative session. But that's a baseline, and I'm sure if Mary is elected to the Senate, she would most likely bring forth her bill because she feels very passionate. I've chatted with her about it. She's a very good salesperson for her bill.
Wonderful. Thank you. I want to open it up to the committee now if there's any questions. Supervisor Boyd, Frederick?
You mentioned we're the ones closest to the people. I've been on legislative now, I think, 3 terms. We've said stuff about dark stores now for 6 years. Talked about medical marijuana, and now I know Representative Sargent will probably be Senator Sargent as well, if I've read it right.
Yes, Senator, yes, she's yeah. Ready to be.
When is stuff we've sent up? We've sent up stuff for a while. Like, when are we actually going to see stuff we sent up going to be actually done? Because when I work on this, I'm wondering how much is actually going to be done when it comes to the WCA bills. I've got 30 bills I'm going to be voting on Monday. Is there stuff that's actually going to be done with these, and with the task force, with the speaker? I mean, is how much, when it comes to like Milwaukee representation, is there a lot of representation with that? There's questions, you know, when it comes to local people, local representation, and what the local people are saying. Where is, you know, we've been saying stuff. Are we being really listened to?
Well, with regards to the medical marijuana bills, there are several different proposals out there, from legalization, complete legalization, to the medical side. And like I said, to pass the CBD bill a few years ago was a tough thing to do. So again, there are still opposition to those bills out there. But again, I think as more people have more conversations with people in their legislative districts, and seeing that, you know, if you do pass it again in a smaller form, it's helpful. I mean, the CBD oil bill, Sally Schaefer, she was one of the lead moms that came to testify on the bill. She's from the Burlington, Union Grove area. It took 4 years to get something very simple that isn't THC to pass. You know, so that was a really challenging time. With regards to, you know, other bills, sometimes there's opposition out there. Not everything flies through the county board, you know, unanimously. And so legislation, every legislative session, there's about 2,000 bills, boy, that are introduced, and only a handful, like, actually become law. My first legislative session in 2000, out of the 1,000 or 2,000 bills that were introduced, only 89 actually got signed into law. So not very many my first legislative session, because the houses were split controlled. We had Democrats in the Senate and Republicans in the Assembly. And we had Governor Thompson and then Governor McCallum that became governor. So if you go back and look at about 300 bills that actually become law every 2 years.
So let me just add to that too, Boyd. I think CBD was for probably 5 years, because Sally talked to me when I was running, or I was on the county board, that if I ever got elected, she wanted me to do something about it. And I did when I first got in there. But it took 4 years to get that bill passed. Fallen officers took 8 years to get through the process. So that was 4 sessions of the legislature, but we got it passed. Marcy's law was about 3.5 years, but it had to go through consecutively through 2 different legislatures, got that passed. So I guess it's persistence, and it's about understanding the process. It's oftentimes easier to pass bills that you can, if you had all 3 houses, it's easier because everybody's kind of on the same page. You don't get as much opposition. But I will say that with what we have and what we've been working on, I know that the bills that I'm working on, I have many colleagues from the other side of the aisle. Matter of fact, some of them come to me and ask me to support bills that they have ideas for, and ask me to take and actually be the one that authors it. And my response is, no, I won't be the one that authors it, but I will co-author it with you. Because they think that if it's just them on the bill, it's not going anywhere. And that might be true with the politics of today. But if you get people to sit down and talk about bills, with the thing that we've been talking about here is having discussions and building relationships, that changes an awful lot of the mechanics of what happens. But the process of building a bill, like when we work on something, if I'm bring a bill forward in the Senate right away, I go find somebody in the assembly, and usually it's Sam, or it could be Tip, or it could be Todd. I'll ask them if they will work with it in the assembly side of things, and we'll try to get individuals from both sides of the aisle on the bill, because then it's got a better chance of passing. When we did the juvenile justice bill, as an example, Robin had all of the stakeholders in his conference room, and you checked your R or your D or who you were at the door, and the WCA was sitting right at the table with us, and we worked through that process. And when we came out of there, we had a bill that passed unanimously in the assembly. And after a little bit of work that I had to do in the 11th hour in the Senate, passed unanimously in the Senate, and they're already building a couple of those facilities right now. So the process has started, but it's about building those relationships and being able to be persistent and get everybody on board and get them educated. So when we start and we have parallel bills going in both houses, because it's got to pass both houses. And if it continues to change, you don't want two different bills. You want to have them as close as you can, so you're not going back and forth with changes. So you kind of work all the bugs out between both houses with hearings, and you have hearings in both houses. You move those bills forward, and we end up having a lot more legislation passed because we work all the unintended consequences out of it, hopefully, before it gets to the floor. And then it makes it a little easier for it to pass the process, and especially when you get everybody on board, they understand what you're trying to do and what the mission is, and they've been part of the process. And I think that's the big thing, is being inclusive and having people of differing thoughts, having them at the table to be able to talk about it. Now, you're not always happy with necessarily what comes out of there, but at least if you're part of the process and you make you add some value to what's happening and improve the bill, that's a good thing for everybody.
I just want to bring up, so last year, I think I talked about one of the OWI bills that I was working on. Jennifer Kilborn, she was hit here on Highway 50, by a repeat drunk driver of the same night. He was picked up earlier, and he was released into his mother's care. Within 45 minutes later, he was back driving, and that's when he hit Jennifer running through the red light. There's opposition to that bill, even though I told, Jennifer will forever have an impact of that accident. She was on her way to work as a nurse at Aurora and hit 10 minutes before she's supposed to be on the job. Yet there's opposition. And I've reached out to a number of the colleagues that are on those standing committees to try to gain support. You get a little bit here and you try to, modify the bill a little bit over there to try to get, consensus so that you can get a bill through. So, but the drunk driving bills, that's a really tough one, Boyd, where over the years, Jim Ott has introduced so many pieces of legislation that haven't made it all the way through. Right. Because if you...
Are you good, Senator? Or Supervisor Frederick? Thank you.
Hey, Supervisor, can you, the youth and governance member, where is she from? Where's Audrey from?
I'm from Kenosha here. I live down by the lake.
What year are you?
I'm a senior in high school at Lakeview Technology Academy.
And do you hope to go into politics or law?
No, I actually want to study neurobiology, but I've always been interested in politics. It's always been something pretty relevant in my family, so.
Well, thank you for being here and spending your night with us. I appreciate that.
Are there any other comments or questions from the committee? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a whole page of them. I don't know if we're going to have time for it. Both of the P people coming before us tonight have talked about camaraderie and working together and respectful conversations. We could use a little bit of that on our county board. So that's one thing. Let's talk about body cams. Did you guys dive into the costs for those? I mean, can you get some cost numbers to our sheriff's department for cloud storage and that type of thing?
Actually, I think Dave has already, he's worked something out that he's going to give you in the budget. So he's got some of those things identified for some of the costs. And that was one of the big things. It's not so much the cameras, it's the storage that's exactly the big issue.
Exactly.
And where the expenses. But my understanding is that has come way down in what that cost is. But it depends on how long you got to maintain that in the library too. So those are some of the things that we had legislation that actually carved that out minimums. And this that passed this last session, and where it had with, you know, what you have to save, what you can release, what you can't release. Those things are in that legislation.
But I sit on finance. I'm more concerned with the cost of having that storage.
I don't know what those are.
The main things that I'll be looking at.
Okay.
I agree. The body cams can be bonded for, and we can proceed with that. But I really would like to see if there's, you know, and if Dave's reaching out to you, that takes care of that. I'll move on to, we're going to be dealing with another resolution later where the maker wants to ask the state and federal government for funds to help rebuild Kenosha. Are either of you two aware of any funds or you know, financial aid packages that are coming to Kenosha? And I hope you take a look at the uptown and the downtown on your way in and out. Are there any funds available for that?
So there are some. I know through FEMA, I know that the county has asked for that. I know the senator and I last week reached out to County Exec Cruiser and sent him an email to ask to sit down and have a conversation with him about what's really needed. I know that the probation and parole office that burned down, space will have to be found someplace else. Those are some of the questions I'm asking right now, is the cost to actually, what are the true costs? What is insurance covering? I know that, you know, I've seen some reports of the courthouse, different things that the facilities where windows and doors and such that need to be replaced. But I don't have a concrete, I haven't seen anything concrete. Have you?
No, I haven't. I've got just the maker of this resolution's, you know, number. I don't know where he got it, of 50 million, but regardless, I think that now is the time when the people in the uptown are looking for help. The people, you know, that have lost their businesses. It's not a time to take 3.5 years to pass legislation. It's time to get off our butts and get something done.
So the hard part is we haven't, you know, somebody's put a number out there and I don't have any actual figures.
I agree with you.
I'm not
saying the 50 million is an exact number. I think that needs to be put, you know, to the test, and we need to do that. But I think that needs to be done.
And that's where I hope that we can have further conversations, because it is critical. And you know, the president offered the $1 million to the Kenosha Sheriff's Department and to the police department, the $4 million through the SBA, I think, through assistance. And then there's $42 million additionally that is coming in, but that's for all of law enforcement and the prosecutor side in Wisconsin.
Right. One of my major concerns is our business owners and our people who have residences in the uptown. And, you know, figuring out law enforcement is great. Having conversations is great. But right now we've got burned down businesses and people out of their residences. So that to me should be a priority.
I agree with you 100%.
And the governor's talked about tapping some of the other resources he has. And I think there may be dollars in the CARES, dollars that we've already seen that have not been committed for other issues too. So I think they're trying to work through that now, but we're kind of putting the cart before the horse until they actually get a solid number and kind of have a better idea, perspective. And this is, and you know, as you're speaking about that, this is what is so important. There was so much pushback with President Trump coming here. And I think that was good that he came here. I support it 100%, and I don't care who the sitting president would have been. It's important for them to be here in middle America in a small town. It's a pretty big sized town, but it's a small town compared to Chicago and all the other ones that get all of the attention. And you see him coming here because he wants to have a conversation, and he was locked in conversation with people that were affected by this. But now he has a visual that he can take back and he can understand. So when we ask them for a number, he's not going to blow that off. He's going to have a good idea what it is. And I think he's going to be willing to help us, because we're not just sitting here with our hand out. We're asking for help, but we're willing to do a lot of it on our own. I've seen citizens from all around Kenosha, not just in the city, from outside the city in the county, come in to help people that needed help getting their buildings secured, cleaning up things. This is what we do. I mean, we help each other. And if you looked at the numbers, I think it was 132 of the people that were here when we had the violence weren't even from here, you know? And so that's a big part of the problem too, that when we have that and we have people that now are in those neighborhoods are going to be changed forever. Look at the people that had the furniture store for 42 years. They're going to rebuild, but it's not going to be exactly the same thing as what it was. So I think we're going to see that the rest of the community will come together. And I think there will be funding resources. I don't know if it'll be $50 million. I doubt that it'll be that high, but maybe that's a number they're looking at, a total with resources from all different directions. So hopefully we'll get there and we'll do it relatively quickly.
Yeah. I would ask that both of you make that a priority when you get back.
It is. Session. It actually already is. Too,
you know, I mean, we can haggle over a lot of different things, but replacing people's homes and businesses shouldn't be one of them. That's our input from the county. Also, I want to touch on Boyd's comment, which, you know, went on to a big, long answer that really, I mean, what he really wanted to hear was that you guys will actually respond to us, that you've heard us and maybe get us some information on what bills might be out there or some feedback to either this committee or whoever sends it up to you. But I think, you know, sometimes I've been doing this for 14 years now, we send stuff up and it's like going into the cloud, and I'm not very technological, but I know that's not a good place. I mean, it's just out there. So we would like to hear responses back. So if you could help facilitate that, I would appreciate it.
Well, I will say at any time, feel free to give me a call.
Oh, I have.
You know, just feel free at any time. I work more, just pick up the phone. I'll get that answer back to you.
I actually get emails and texts from Andy. I get them from Boyd. I get them from Todd Honstedt and Tip. They'll send me questions, you know, or ask me about where we're at with things. We don't have a problem responding to that. Because you are an arm of state government. So we need to be there to give you answers too. So we're not opposed to that. So we'll help you any way we can.
Okay. Well, our arm is bleeding, so help us fix it.
That's what I said when I was on the Racine County Board too, because that really was.
Thank you.
All right. We have a couple more minutes. Is there left and right sign, yes or no's? So, okay, no more questions. I want to thank you both for coming here, Senator and Representative, and taking your time to be here and speaking with us and speaking with the citizens of Kenosha. So thank you, and have a wonderful day.
So if I can just say this, is that if anybody has an area of interest of things that might be coming up in the legislature, if you go to either mine or Sam's website, you can go in there and you can put your email address in and what the area is that you're interested in. And anytime something comes up that's going to be in a discussion group, or they're going to have a public hearing on or going on the floor, you will get a notice. And you can look and say, no, I'm not interested. Oh, this is the one I'm interested in. I want. So if you have something that you guys are working on, don't be afraid to do that too. You can call our office too, but this will also give you an independent thing too.
It's on the legislative committee or legislative website. You can go in and just, if like OWI bills or body cam bills or mental health, there's like an area where it will send you every piece of legislation on that. Yep.
And then you'll be able to ask us good questions. Maybe we can get you answers for quicker.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I will now take a motion to adjourn. Motion by Supervisor Nordigian and seconded by Supervisor Kubicki. All those in favor? Those against? Passes. Adjourned.